It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all, welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Adit. In today's episode, we have a returning guest, a very popular one, I must say, to give us an Australian perspective on the ongoing BGT, as well as, you know, shed some light on some very interesting games in the Women's World Cup and the WIPL auctions and other cricket news from the cricketing world. Welcome to the episode, Mog.
G'day. That was Australian.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Let's see how much more Australianisms you can get in before the episode is done.
Most of them are swearing, so maybe not.
It's okay. We know you're Mog, right? So be yourself. So that's one thing. And I think let's just dive in. So BGT, Australia, first test. Any surprises?
Other than the fact that Todd Murphy played and Travis Head didn't, not really.
So let's go into the first of those and then the second. Both are interesting discussion points. So they always invite parents, do they, when they give debut caps to young teenagers or youngsters, so that they can come watch their kids perform or fail or whatever?
You'd like to think that they would. It's not like they're short of a dollar, so they can afford to fly a couple of people over. Well, if they pay for the parents, maybe they make the parents pay themselves.
I don't think they pay for the parents. That's, come on, a two-way ticket from India to Australia is way too costly, I think, Mark.
That's just rude.
Oh, but this lad didn't let his parents down. Neither did the other one, Agar, previously, right?
No.
So, 7-4?
Well... Better than if you went out first ball and then got tonked for none for 180, I guess.
Fair enough. So I think there's only one example of such a recorded thing. I think there was an English cricketer in the 1940s whose wife, 1930s, I think, whose wife was knitting something, and he went into bat and she dropped her knitting kit and she bent down to pick it up, and when she rose her or put her head up again, he was out. He was bowled. She had missed it. So I think at least they traveled a fair way. And I think he did justice. He was on the field for a long time, right?
Got a lot of air time. So it's a good start.
But so what's with Australian off-break bowlers in India? So Jason Kraser before him and this guy. I hope he goes much better than Jason Kraser, do you think?
Let's hope there's more pan than just flash. Well, or no. Jason Kraser.
Oh, yeah. He was discarded too early, I thought. But, you know, that's way back when. But if you come back to this youngster, look, I like his bowling style. He bowls faster. And there will be some adjustments to come. But what I like is his relentlessness. He's right there and thereabouts. You have to play him from the front of the back foot all the time and use your bat. He'll not let you leave a lot of balls, isn't it?
I think he hasn't played that many domestic games, so he maybe hasn't learned too many questionable tactics
I see.
That the older bowlers might be keen to get him into. So he played in the BBL this year. I saw him in that a little bit, and he seemed pretty good.
He's highly rated.
Paid off so far.
Highly rated. Exactly. I mean, the bald one also rates him pretty high. What do you think? He's set up to take over from the bald one once he goes.
I think we might want to wait to see whether or not he lasts more than a couple of tests.
Okay.
We don't want another Dan Cullen or Michael Beer on our hands.
Oh, yeah. And Xavier Doherty, I thought he could have played a couple more tests. But, I mean, I think he had some other issues off the field or what.
I had terrible haircut too, so that really shriveled him out.
Oh, yeah. Him and Steve O'Keefe. All right. So, I mean, you know, sometimes you have to try your spinners against your own Punjab canteen 11 or whatever that was, right? And then you know the quality before you bring them over to India. But that's just more water under the bridge, isn't it?
They didn't play any warm-up games, so...
That was a good one. You know, that's an interesting point because I think they declined a warm-up game because they said the pitch was not good at all, nowhere near what they could expect in a real match. So they asked, give us center pitch practice on one of the... I think they were given a center pitch practice in Bangalore somewhere, in the NCA, National Cricket Academy here, and they were happy with that, I thought.
Well, given how, quote-unquote, doctored the actual test pitch was, maybe they should have played on a really bad one. Might have helped them out a little bit.
So, shots fired. So the pitch was doctored, you say?
Oh, no, I don't say that. The pitch was prepared as most nations would prepare pitches in their home country, I would have thought. Both teams had to play on it, so an Australian spinner managed to take 7 wickets. It can't have been that one-sided. Australia just couldn't bat. Was their problem, I think.
So that's pretty much hitting the nail on the head. Then comes the next point, Travis Head. For Matt Renshaw?
I was under the impression I had heard that he was injured and therefore that's why he wasn't picked, but apparently he wasn't. So whether or not the looming spectre of pitch doctoring and Indian spinners scared the selectors enough to drop him and put in somebody else, I wouldn't like to speculate, really. But Renshaw didn't really polish his reputation at all, and Hanscom wasn't quite as bad, but I don't think either of them would have been any great loss if he'd played instead. So probably a mistake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so why bring him on the tour at all if you don't trust him in the very first test, right? So if you say he can't play spin, why do you bring him on the tour? That was like, for me, a very weird thing to do. So you do expect faster pitches later on. I mean, as the series gets tighter, do you expect better pitches, more bowler-friendly pitches, fast bowler-friendly pitches? I don't know. What's the thought process there?
I would imagine that given the way the first test went, they may not need to play any pace bowlers at all. They'll just bring in a battery of 5 or 6 spinners of various kinds, and that'll get the job done.
Nah, I mean, Shami was pretty good, wasn't he, from Indian perspective, and Cummins was extremely good. So, look, I think the way I look at it, you would require at least 1 to 2 good fast bowlers, even on what you might call a complete dust bowl of an Indian pitch, because things are going well, your spinners will do all you want. But otherwise, you'll need some variety, right? If Green plays, you get that automatically. Then I would say let the captain in Green play as fast bowlers. It looks like Hazelwood is still injured. Stark might be fit. Do you think they'll include Stark in the second test?
Now that they've had the experiment, I guess, and if they can get Green back in, there might not be as much pressure to play Stark instead of, say, Boland. Boland didn't really do that well. Didn't do overly badly, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I think if they decide that they need pace, then they'll pick him over Boland, I think.
See, Green brings two advantages. One, he can give you I don't know, 10, 12 overs in an innings you might need from a faster bowler. But he has a lot of stability. The way he bats, I really like him. This guy is what, 6 foot plenty, no? So he can also stretch right down the pitch.
He's latest in a long line of golden boy all-rounders Australia likes to go with. Ever since Flintoff touched him up, whenever it was in 2005 or something. They've been desperately trying to find them. But he seems like a good fit, I think.
So I really like the composure he shows around the crease. The solidity, sort of, you know, the rest of the people in the dressing room can just take a deep breath when he's at the crease. You always have people like that. I thought Travis Head had that quality, and I would actually place that very high on the list. You see Marnus and Steve Smith play, they're twitching, and it still doesn't give you that kind of... You can be confident, but you can't be comfortable somehow. That's my feeling, right?
The number of times Steve Smith played at something and missed, and then he twitched, gave the thumbs up to the bowler, it just made me want to run out there and smack him. I wonder if it's a case of... With those two guys twitching and spasming and just generally not possibly scoring runs while they do it, they do need somebody who can stabilise things a bit, which I guess gets to your point of him being a stable, level-headed. He's not going to do some sort of weird dill scoop reverse sweep thing at the wrong time.
Right. I think Gary can't then be told to not reverse sweep. Apparently that's in his DNA and falling into balls.
I think his arm is permanently bent in reverse sweep mode, so he literally can't do anything else.
So coming back to the other thing, I mean, Peter Handscomb, so I think he deserved another chance based on how he played in the first innings. But if you see both Head and Green sort of fitting back in, if Green is fit, he'll play. I don't see any issues there. But if they say, let's just swap Renshaw for Head, then would Pete Handscomb lose his place to Green then?
I'm going to give a disclaimer here that I hate this person I'm about to mention so very, very much, but David Warner needs to maybe have a rest.
I was going to bring that up next, but go on.
Again, I may be slightly biased, but he just seems a bit cooked. If you drop him, bring Head in, Head could potentially open. Warner's not providing a great deal. And hasn't, apart from one minor blip, he hasn't for a while. So I think it's probably time they look very long and hard at telling him it's time to go. Get out of the way now. Get some new guys in there, settle before they have to go off and play the Ashes. And then I can just laugh and laugh and laugh at Dave Warner trudging off for the last time.
Well, I mean, you can laugh at him, laugh at his back. When you look at his face, he'll probably still be smiling. He's earned enough money and enough reputation. So not many people got a big 100 in their 100th test. He got a double, right?
On him. Add a few dollars to his IPL contract.
Yeah, look, for a basher who came out of T20 and played a T20 international before even a first-class match, if I'm not wrong, he's played 100 tests. He's the one that's actually going to walk away laughing. I mean, and I think, you're right in as much that maybe he's done. He's never really good on South Asian pitches. So that's really showing up badly here. He looked strokeless. He tried to spend some time, but there are no runs coming. That was not nice to see.
I think it was very nice to see him not scoring. Maybe he's just not the kind of guy, I think, that can sit there and go, well, I'm going to graft for 50 or 60 balls and only have 15 at the end of that period. And then now that I'm bedded in, I can go back to my more fluent ways. I don't think he necessarily has the patience to do that kind of thing. And that might be a little bit more of what's required than trying to be pugnacious and fight his way out.
Fair enough. I think that's the Head that's gone, because a Warner 5 years ago would have done exactly that, what you're saying. But I think it might be the Head thing now. He's old enough. But look, I mean, I'll just switch to the other side of the coin now. KL Rahul has been attracting a lot of flack for the way he played. But I think he did what Warner should have done, isn't it? 20 of 71 or something, while on the other end his captain kept blazing.
Yeah, he sort of, he dug in to use a horrible cliche, but he sort of sat there and anchored one end while, you know, people around him would get the job done, so to speak. Was he opening in the last series they played? I don't remember.
I think so, yes. I think so. I can't remember absolutely as well. Let's just say he was the man in possession. That's why he was chosen to go in. So because there are plenty of people chomping at the bit, right? You have Shubman Gill, right? And then, so that was one of the things I'm happy about if they want to continue. So I gave that 71 ball 20 a lot more credit because, look, Pat Cummins and had a little bit of an off day, I think, in the first half of that Indian innings. And that was fully capitalized. Otherwise, India would not have gotten onto the sort of start they could and they did, because KL Rahul was going nowhere, but Rohit Sharma was going at run a ball until into his 40s, if I'm not wrong, right? So that 71 run partnership or whatever for the first wicket was what really killed the match, if you think about it, on the first day.
Getting off to that kind of start means they don't have to be quite so frantic as the afternoon lengthened. So, right. And yeah, Cummins, his first four overs went for 30 odd, so he was just he wasn't switched on right, or they just made a proper decision to have a crack at him. I don't know, but he got better, but he didn't start off that great, and that may have put them on the back foot really early.
And I thought Lyon took some time as well getting into the groove, but he did get in there. But I think those first 15-20 overs of the Indian innings was the most crucial if you're an Australian bowling attack, where you say they need to be 42 for 2 or whatever. If they get to 50 for no loss, we're screwed here. And that's what happened. And from that point on, look, the other thing, Kohli couldn't get runs. Pujara was probably not happy. He didn't go in at 3. What did you make of Ashwin's promotion? That was a real left field decision for me.
Well, there's India's permanent number 3 right there. He could just fill that spot perfectly.
Well, even after they leave these shores and go abroad to Sena countries?
Sena countries? Why not?
He has the strokes.
He's made hundreds. He can fit in at number 3, give everybody else a bit more time off, take some pressure off Kohli and the likes. Or conversely, just put him back at number 8 and let him do his normal job. And let Pujara sit there and play like a wall.
Pretty much. Look, this was a pitch tailor-made for somebody like Pujara. Take 170 balls, score 55, and then let everybody around him bat. Rohit Sharma did that with KL Rahul, and then you'd expect Kohli to do that with Pujara. And then the next sort of interesting selection, Suryakumar Yadav. I would have expected another stalwart of the Ranji season currently, Sarfraz Khan, a youngster. A rather big-boned youngster, as he's known, to have made the cut. But I think he was kept out. And Suryakumar Yadav, who sort of now he's the darling boy around these parts. So he was included, but he couldn't get going. Well, not that that's a bad thing or a good thing. It just happens to people, right? Did you think he could have merited selection ahead of somebody else who might have been in the pecking order only for tests?
I got the impression that he got picked on the back of having a whole flurry of runs in short form cricket.
Precisely.
And whether or not that's a good way to put somebody into a test side, he's in form. He's probably seeing the ball like it's a bus, but maybe he only sees white balls as a bus and is a bit more colorblind with the red ones. So I'm not sure. I might sound horribly conservative by suggesting that they put somebody with a bit more in the way of Red Bull credentials in there instead. His time may well come.
Oh, yeah. No, the Sarfraz Khan is one. Of course. See, Sarfraz Khan is a youngster as well. He's only 23, 24. But see, the Indian selectors sometimes do this. They pick a guy just after he's off his peak and he's on the way down. And then they say, look, he was never meant to be good enough at international cricket. So Sarfraz Khan is averaging 80 over, I think, 35 first-class games. And he's had a crackerjack of a Ranji Trophy season as well. And we are now going to have the finals. So the sort of the right time of the year where he's shown what he can do. So I thought that was a bit unfair on him, but we'll see if that pans out. But now moving on for the rest of the Indian order, I was really surprised and happy to see the staying power of the two left-handers, Jadeja and Akshar. Something I expected, something that took you by surprise?
Well, you don't normally expect guys that far down the order to do large amounts of run scoring, but I guess once they got in there, the bowling wasn't good enough to dislodge them. They weren't getting them out. They were sort of bowling at them and hoping. So it warmed the cockles of my heart to see a tail wag heavily against Australia, because they have done that to so many people over the years. They deserve a bit of their own medicine.
Fair enough.
That's going to be useful in later tests too.
Of course, not. It's all psychological as well, right? So, you know, not only with the ball, but the Indian spinners are going to be heavy on you even with the bat. So that's always a bit psychological heading into the last 2 to 3 tests. So, and Shami also getting in a couple of hits, right? So Shami was a good all-rounder's role, I thought. I mean, wickets and runs. I mean, he's made himself undroppable, hasn't he?
Yeah, his batting performance, I think, was just kind of, well, let's score some runs quickly. And out he went and smacked a few around and did the job. So
yeah.
As long as his bowling doesn't fall in a heap, I think he probably would be quite undroppable.
Fair enough. See, from this performance, I don't see either Siraj or Shami being dropped, unless the pitch demands that, right, in the next test. But I think India will still go with the same bowling lineup, these same 5 people. Kuldeep could have gotten in, but so in the previous episode, we were discussing it really depends on the pitch. If they see a steady pitch, they'll take Akshar ahead of Kuldeep. Rather, if they see a dangerous pitch, they'll take Akshar ahead of Kuldeep, because on a dangerous pitch, you need to put the ball there or thereabouts. But on a more docile pitch, you need the bowler to do more, right? So it really depends on the pitch for me, but I don't see them breaking up a winning lineup unnecessarily. For India, do you see any changes in the lineup?
I can't imagine that they'll stick with Sky. The bowlers all did what they needed to do. So yeah, unless there's some really bizarre change in the pitches that you'd expect, then I can't see why they'd bother to change anything.
All right. So a quick prediction on the remaining tests. And the overall scoreline of BDT this year?
Australia will clearly do better. Like, they might even make 150 in one of the tests. I can't imagine Australia's really going to be able to win any. They might scrape one home sort of once maybe the last test, once the interest has waned a bit and it's already in the bag. But I think we're looking at 3-0 or 4-0, or 3-1, 4-0, something like that.
So a 3-1 or a 4-0 will more or less mean it'll be India-Australia World Test Championship Finals come summer.
Yeah, last I looked into it, I think there were some other teams that had a minor chance of getting in there, but it's down to Sri Lanka beating New Zealand or something. There's a whole lot of really highly unlikely permutations. So I think we can just say it's going to be Australia and India.
Oh, there's one other chance, one other contender. It's South Africa. So not only does India need to beat Australia 3-1 or better, but South Africa should not win their first test against West Indies at home, right? Both of these things need to happen. Otherwise, it'll be South Africa, Australia. So I think Sri Lanka, New Zealand have completely gone off the chance list there. But let's just see. So at least as far as I'm concerned, India started the right way in a quest to play the World Test Championship final. Australia are already there. So all that matters really is, can, you know, the rest of the things fall in place. Otherwise, I would also take a South Africa versus Australia, right? It's going to be good.
Having just seen South Africa play Australia here over the end of last year, I'd probably rather not want to watch that horror show again.
South Africa
just didn't show up.
If South Africa need to do what they do, and they could go to the finals, I think that'll be a different South Africa playing Australia.
Different venues too, I guess. So, yeah.
Okay.
Scars. So many scars.
Well, you live and learn, Mark. Or you don't, in any case. Right. So, moving on. If you were to take a quick look at the other test that's currently in progress, which is Zimbabwe versus West Indies. So I think the 3 days are done, but again, some rain delay was there. But yeah, West Indies, like, just 2 days done, in fact, and they're completely on top. So when you look at the scorecard, you see that Zimbabwe were 115 all out, and Gudakesh Mothi, the spinner, he bowls good left-arm, steady left-arm spin, actually, orthodox. And he's took a 7 for wonderful bowling there. And West Indies have replied with 290 for 8. So they may extend it by a bit, or they may not. I don't know how it goes. But this is a done and dusted test as far as Zimbabwe are concerned?
Well, the short answer is yes. No Gary Balance, no Zimbabwe, apparently. I can't see them getting out of it unless there's a lot more rain and they end up having a draw. I don't think they're going to be in a position to win it at any point. They sort of fell over very rapidly. And good to see another kid get 7-4
right
early on.
So I can tell you I was a bit disappointed. I followed a bit of the first day's play. And it was very unfortunate to see that, you know, the same stickability they showed in the very first test that saved them the game, they couldn't display again here. So most of his wickets were through fast arm balls. It was not a pitch that was turning from day one or anything, right? So there was like a little bit of turn. And there was enough in the pitch if you wanted to bat. It was not completely a bowler-dominated sort of a pitch. So I was really disappointed that what happened to Zimbabwe. I mean, look, this can happen when stronger test teams play weaker test teams. Usually in a series, the first test is better contested and then it sort of trickles away. That might be the case. And also, Zimbabwe are missing Sikandar Raza and Sean Williams. I think that would have been a huge difference, especially to the batting, no?
I think so, yeah. They've got a couple of guys who've debuted in this series. I think the wicketkeeper is playing his second test now after his first one in the opening test. So having those two guys, it's a lot of experience to be missing out on. So whether that would have made a huge difference, we will never know. But I think the whole thing of Mothi coming in and bamboozling them somewhat, I guess that's is that a one-off? Is that something that's a problem with Zimbabwe, or is he just that clever?
No, I mean, he's been actually a journeyman. He's been around for a while already. I know this name for 7-8 years myself. I'm curious how he'll perform when he comes to India or somewhere in the subcontinent where the conditions which actually suit him, but the lineup would also know how to play him. Yeah? So that would be a real test. So there have been West Indian spinners in the last 20, 25 years who've been moderately successful, there or thereabouts. But when they come to the subcontinent, they get found out in their own friendly conditions. So why I say this is people like Lan have won tests. Graham Swan have won tests in India, right?
If I was trying to think of somebody else who's done well, and I'm completely failing. I suppose with the West Indies, they don't... The setup of the West Indies is that they seem to have tests as a bit of an afterthought. So then maybe guys just aren't, spinners specifically, just aren't getting the experience they need to be particularly penetrating and dangerous in the subcontinent. So I can't rely on their fast bowlers.
They could. So Sharon Gabriel has come back. Roach has been rested. So if these two can get firing together, that's something, right?
That'd be good for a potential good sign for the future, you think? If they get to play more tests, I haven't checked their future.
Oh, they're playing South Africa next. They're going to go to South Africa to play that series, which we discussed earlier.
Oh, so, just next door, so that's easy.
So let's see how that goes. So, okay, that were the two tests. Now, if you were to move on to the Women's World Cup, so quite a few matches, the first week of exchanges are done. So, any surprises at all? Australia is still very comfortable. England comfortable. And South Africa started a little bit on a blip, but they seem to have recovered yesterday. And when you look at the one team which you thought would do well but are in a little bit of trouble, are New Zealand. Thoughts?
I have no idea what's gone wrong with them. They just were really bad against South Africa.
Hmm.
They just, yeah, I maybe South Africa was feeling a little bit stung after their first match and put in the big effort. I'm not sure, but I would have considered New Zealand to be a much better chance than what they are showing now.
Right.
Equally, I would have thought South Africa maybe would be a little bit reduced because Dana van Niekerk wasn't playing and all the stuff around that.
But
I seem to be going okay. Exactly. Based on their 1-1 record so far.
Look, when I look back at South African cricketing teams and sporting teams in general, right, they find that extra gear in spite of missing personnel and all that. I've seen that in rugby, I've seen that in cricket. So Marizane Kapp may or may not find that required gear herself, what with whatever happened off field, yeah? So, but they've done well. It's at home. They'll not want to let their home audience down. So I expect they will bring that extra special gear to the game. But yesterday I was really disappointed. New Zealand double digits all out, 76, was it? So that was
67.
A bit 67. There you go. That was a bit disappointing because it was still a middling sort of a total. They didn't run away with it, South Africa. 134, it was chaseable, I thought. So that was a bit disappointing for me. Chloe Trion, I think, very well with both the bat and the ball. She's been doing well in the last couple of months. Do you see her play a major role in the World Cup then?
I think she seems to have stepped up a bit more of late. She played in the WBBL down here last year, I think. And I'm making this statement without any stats to back me up. She seemed to pop up quite a lot with sort of very useful cameos from memory.
Mm.
So she seems to be in a good spot, to use another cliche.
Oh, no, her and Mlaba, who was sort of always in the team, not doing much. Look, Shabnim Ismail has not done much. Ayabonga Kaka has not done much yet. So their fast bowling lineup, I expect, will come to the party sometime shortly, right? And then Marizane Kapp, I expect, as the tournament goes on, will shrug off whatever that is bothering her. And if that's a real, real good outfit right there. And they're playing at home, right? And the other good team that I see, well, India, I think they're looking very confident right now, but that's just of one game. So I was, first of all, very surprised they conceded 149. I'd only seen the first half of that Pakistan batting innings. Then I did other things. And did you catch this game, India-Pakistan? What did you think of that?
It was a good game. I didn't see the whole thing live. I only saw a highlights package afterwards, for the most part. It seems like they both... the traditional rivals kind of thing. They seem to both teams seem to be fairly invested in it all. Pakistan did much better than I was expecting they would have.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were in with a real chance. And in the end, it was the plucky Ghosh, the keeper. And of course, Jemima Rodrigues, who sort of rediscovered herself in the Indian middle order. They took India home. And, you know, I was a bit nervous. I saw the last 5 hours live and India needed 41 of 4 in the end, and then they got it in just three overs.
Balls to spare. You might as well put them in the bank and save them up for another day.
Well, that's not how it works, I suppose, limited cricket, but net run rate might still help. You know, as a joke, what you mentioned is very interesting. Towards the end of, we play what we call gully cricket here, the cricket on the streets, right? Mm. So a friend of mine had invented such a way where the first innings would be 9 overs. The second innings would only be 8. So if you were able to get the opposition all out before their full quota, you would claim those balls.
Ah.
But then a draw was a real result as well. So because you got less number of overs, if the opposition batted 9, because you got only 8, if they couldn't get you all out by then they had to take a draw. It was not just a limited overs game. So a friend of mine had invented such a game, and I've taught this to a couple more other people with whom I've played. So something interesting, yeah? So you can still keep the kids who play interested in the sort of long format approach, even when you play the short format.
Don't tell the ICC that. They might try to adopt it for the next cycle of the World Championship games.
Come on. We are test match fans, right? This is a test match podcast. Why not? Okay. So now the other team I'm really enthusiastic about was Sri Lanka. They've got a couple of easy games, I must say. Bangladesh were really punching below their weight. I don't know what happened in that game. And I think on these pitches, what I see, 135 might not be as bad a total as it might appear.
From what I've seen, that the 130, 140 sort of score seems to be fairly attainable. I guess if, as far as Bangladesh goes, I think they've been making some strides in the right direction, but they seem to be a bit off as well. So well, whether or not,
Look, for Asian teams traveling abroad, the men's teams had this in the 90s, at least the Indian team, and Bangladesh team had it even in the 2000s, right? So whenever they go into alien conditions, I think they're still not able to adapt from match one. Right. So that was what might have happened for Bangladesh. It was their first game. But I expect them to compete hard. Right. So it's going to be interesting. But I'll ask you that question, which is more heading towards the other end of the tournament. Who do you see as the semifinalists?
I think we can lock in Australia and India and probably South Africa and England would be the other ones, I think, at this point. I'm not sure if Sri Lanka are going to be able to sustain it all the way through. They've won the first two, so they're in the right spot heading on further into the tournament. But hey, I'm just not entirely sure they'll make it all the way.
Absolutely. So I think some of these head-to-heads coming up in the next couple of games might be very crucial, especially for South Africa. I think New Zealand are very much on the brink. Bangladesh will have a lot to do. So I think I will go with those four as well. Right? But so the real question is, do you see anybody snatching the trophy out of Australia's hands?
Australia did lose one of the warm-up games to Ireland.
I think they purposefully lost that.
But yeah, you probably can't really put too much stock in that. So I can't really see anybody else winning the whole thing other than Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping, come the day, whichever is the team facing them in the final, they will definitely make the final, right? So maybe it is India, maybe it's South Africa. I really hope, something odd happens for this Australian team because they seem to just know only one way to play, win, right? So I think what have they lost? One game or 2 years or 3 years or some ridiculous number like that.
They've lost two games since 1997 or something outrageous. It's just disgusting.
That's even more daunting than the men's.
Well, they very much so. The Australian women just don't seem to be able to do any wrong, which is good for the sport, I think, in some ways. Gets them a lot of attention down here. Yeah, it's maybe not so great if you're from any other country that has to play them. Very daunting task.
Nonetheless, a couple of weeks of very exciting cricket for us to see before the eventual winner has emerging. But let's see. So now moving on, there are two finals of T20 leagues that have taken place in the interim. So one is the SA T20 finals. The other is the finals of the ILT20, the Dubai or the United Arab Emirates-based league. So, first of all, I didn't catch any of both of these tournaments. I'll be frank with you. There's too much cricket going on and other things going on. So, were you able to catch any of these tournaments of any number of games to make a observation?
I saw the a fair amount of the final of the SA20, and I saw smatterings of other games. The IL20, they need to come up with better names than just a couple of letters in a 20. I don't think down here, I don't think we have any access, sort of easy access to see any of the games. So I must admit that I have seen basically nothing of it as well. It's sort of a, in a way, all these different T20 leagues are just like a standard domestic competition that you might hear about if somebody you know is playing in it. You might sort of occasionally glance at it and think, oh, well, there's someone who I liked has made a few runs or taken a few wickets. Otherwise, the IL20 especially just didn't didn't capture my attention at all.
I think that's what happened with most of us fans. This is what I read as well as saw online. But, you know, the Desert Vipers and Gulf Giants played the final. And Gulf Giants won it comfortably, right? But then there is a story within a story here. Gerhard Erasmus, the captain of the Gulf Giants, or one of the players of Gulf Giants, he captains Namibia. He's in action today. And you tell me you've been following this game, Namibia-Nepal.
Yes, he made a pretty handy 50. Part of the commentary was suggesting that he's actually the best associate batsman getting around at the moment.
Oh, he won the trophy too, no? The ICC trophy.
Yes. Yes, after the, whatever it was last year. So, yeah, he's Namibia. I have a partiality to Namibia and have for many, many years. And it's good to see guys from Namibia getting attention and making runs. Michael van Lingen made 130-odd as well today. And I think that was his highest ever score. So,
absolutely.
Good to see them. Good to see them.
They played a 90 sort of an innings, no? So where they built it up slowly. They got to 125 for two or something within the close to 30th over. And then they built it up from there. Sort of very 90s sort of an innings. But 285 is a very strong score against anybody. But Nepal, I think, are particularly good at home. So I remember them giving Netherlands a proper drubbing. Right, so I expect it'll be a tough contest, this one, whichever way it swings. Nepal are currently 52 for 1 in 11 overs. So they have also made a very decent start in this chase. So I expect this might go down to the wire. So an exciting game if you will continue to follow, Morg.
I will be tuning back into that as soon as we're done. If not before, no, no. I'll give you my full attention.
I'll try to keep you as short a time as possible. Right. So the next final was the SA20 final, which was won by the Sunrisers, Eastern Cape. So the Sunrisers have won something, finally.
It just took them opening up 48 different franchise teams across the world, and eventually success will come.
Well, but, you get success, right, it doesn't matter how you taste it. Then you know the taste of success. You're not going to miss out on it elsewhere as well, no?
You'll walk past your trophy cabinet and there'll be that one thing in there and you'll go, well, we need to put more. Let's win more games, win more things.
Exactly.
And then they come up against everybody else who's got the same idea and, yeah.
Mm. Well, you know.
Point of competition, I guess.
They asked Dhoni this question. You won it all. At some point in time, he held the World Test Championship, as it was called back then, as World Test ranking. So he held the world number one team mace in tests. He held the T20 and the ICC Champions Trophy, if I'm not wrong. No, I think it was the ICC Champions Trophy, the World Cup 50-over trophy, and the Test Championship mace. So then he was asked, What more? And I remember he was also the IPL winning captain. So they asked him, what more do you want? And he said, I would like to do it all again. Such greedy people, yeah?
That is just great. Ah, it's outrageous.
Right. I mean, I don't know what it takes to be an elite sports person. So if you talk of tennis people winning 20 Grand Slams, 22 Grand Slams and so on, yeah?
I can barely win a coin toss. So it's a very, very foreign concept to me.
Nah, that's champion stuff. That's a thought process that is different, you know. I'll not go too far away, but there's a story about Michael Jordan. So he was traveling on a plane with friends and they were just sitting around talking and they started playing a game of cards. And being competitive people, they had to bet something, right? So this guy had to even win that. And he said, I don't even like to let somebody brag that they took $50 of me. If I'm playing, I'm playing to win. That's about it, right? Yeah. That's the attitude. So, Mark, we need to learn something here.
Yeah, that's a bit obnoxious, really. So, yes, let's learn that.
It's okay. So look at some of very successful cricketers like Steve Smith. Obnoxiousness gets you everywhere.
Oh, God, I hate looking at Steve Smith, but, yeah, I take your point.
Fair enough. So, another small news, which I forgot to mention when we discussed the Bodgaskar trophy, of course, is that the third test has been moved out of Dharamshala because they were not happy about the outfield. The grass was not growing as fast as it should because of the cold, etc. or maybe the pitch was too bowler friendly or whatever.
Oh, so in I any thought case, it was because of the giant Himalayan gophers were just digging holes in the outfield.
So it was the goats. Hmm.
Yes.
It's a goat. Okay. Whatever that might be. So there you go. And then it's been moved to Indore, which is not very far as the crow flies from Nagpur. But I must say, I mean, the crow must be a strong one. India is big. But it's definitely much closer to Dharamshala, much closer to Nagpur than Dharamshala. So interesting, right? So I think it might be another... similar sort of a pitch, I expect, because similar sort of weather conditions as well. It's been an unseasonably hot late winter, early spring in India. I'm here and I can tell you that. So what do you expect? So we'll see. We've already gone through this. So moving on, I think there is another one of your favorite cricketers who's decided to hang up his boots, Wayne Morgan.
First off, I thought he had actually retired already, but I think he's officially just giving up everything now, not just his international stuff. I'd like to think he'll go back and help Irish cricket, but I imagine he's deeply embedded in the English system, so he probably won't end up doing that.
I mean, frankly, between the two of us, I expect him to be sort of an assistant T20 coach within a year or two.
Follow the standard road of going into the IPL and being an assistant coach there and working his way up the ranks. Yeah, I think it seems that that's something that he's interested in. He was he wasn't captain coach when he was playing for England, but I think he had a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah. I mean, KKR, yeah, I think, so. When he took them to finals, KKR, I think that was sort of completely unexpected. He was nowhere near a good bat as he was, but his leadership acumen took them to the finals, I remember, right? So I think he might get a cushy seat somewhere in one of the IPL teams. And then, as you say, in a year or two, you might see him pop up as an assistant coach in one of the international teams, maybe England even. So, well, I think he has his things sorted out. He's a tough guy. He knows what he's doing. So nonetheless, we wish him all the best going forward. That brings us to the other main topic that I wanted to discuss, the women's IPL auction, right? So 87 players were bought. A good number of Indian money was spent, something 60 crores close to. That is about $7.3 million, right? So if you look at the team-wise summary, everybody's bought 17 or 18, even 16 players. So five teams. So the costliest, Smriti Mandhana, bought by RCB. But this was expected, that she would be one of the costliest players. And that's how it turned out to be, right? So Indian player, potential captain, also a talismanic player, right? And young enough that you can build a franchise around her. Any surprises there for you?
I think she went for, it was about $600,000 Australian dollars, which is a pretty good payday. Ash Gardner, the...
Ashley Gardner, yes.
The good old Australian all-rounder, she went for not much less than that.
Absolutely.
So it's good to see some money actually in the system. I guess there were a couple of people. I saw only one small part of the actual auction itself, and it was all very slick and professional and lots of sweeping camera angles and musical stings and stuff. And that was Alana King not getting picked up by a team.
Exactly. I was about to bring that up. You brought it up yourself. That was very surprising. Maybe because because she was from the foreign contingent, she didn't get picked up. Because I thought one of the best spinners out there, along with Ecclestone currently, is Alana King.
Yeah, it was unusual. Having had a quick look at the who got bought for what and who didn't get bought, I was starting to form a vague theory that perhaps they're opting more for local spinners rather than overseas spinners, except in sort of a few cases, which I haven't backed that up with any proper research. But some of the players they didn't pick, Sarah Glenn didn't get picked. I don't think Suna Lewis got picked either. I guess I don't know if they're...
Go on.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a second round that they go through and and pick people up later on as reserves, or is this the final team?
I think they're pretty much finalized. I think only one of the teams, UP Warriors, has 16. The rest have 17 or 18, which is what they would have hoped for. Most of them have spent their kitty. That's the whole point. So there might not be a lot left, except for some developmental players to help in the nets and so on. Right? So when you look at the list of players that have been bought and the amount of prices shelled out, Elisa Perry was a cheap buy for RCB, I thought. Again, maybe age is against her.
I think, she's more at the end of her career than the beginning, but I think it's probably a fairly good get, I think. Right.
Talia Magrath, I thought, might have had a better price. And Beth Mooney, well, I expected her to go closer to Mandana that way, because, again, opener, very, very gritty, and, again, potential captain material and so on. But the one thing that sort of left me not very disappointed, but sort of surprised, Harmanpreet Kaur, not right up there when it comes to the amount of money that was spent on her.
Yeah, I guess she's another one who's not the future so much. She's had the career. She's towards the end.
Mm.
Perhaps investing in someone younger is a better option for all the teams.
Absolutely. Yeah. So when you look at her own teammates, so you could easily see Smriti Mandana. You'll see Deepthi Sharma. You'll see a lot of other people, even Jemima Rodrigues. All of these people overtaking her in the amount of money they earned. But even Shefali Verma, but Shefali Verma is the coming girl, as you say, coming woman.
It's been women for a couple of years, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. She's the World Cup winning captain even right now. Right, so there have been a couple of nice picks. Harleen Diol went away very cheaply. Richa Ghosh attracted a much bigger bid. Again, RCB. RCB like to buy big players and keep them together for a while, right? That's what they do even in the men's team. But it looks like they've built a much more balanced team with the women's approach.
I was thinking, when I was looking through the team lists earlier on, I'm going to have to barrack for Gujarat because there's four Australians in the team. So I guess I'll have to.
I see.
That's my one concession to patriotism, is that that's probably what I'll end up doing.
All right. You can have that. No worries. And where do you think my loyalty to Royal Challengers come from? I come from the city, after all.
I've just thought of something I was going to bring up. Alyssa Healy. She seems to have been pretty heftily undervalued. Is it because Indians don't like her? Is she too much of an Australian wicketkeeper for people to appreciate her over there?
I think so. The name Healy and Healy Stark could be a problem. No, I'm kidding. I think somebody bought her off cheap. Her and Jess Jonasson, I'm telling you, those were like amazing purchases.
Yes. It surprised me that she didn't go, Alyssa Healy at least, didn't go for more than she did.
And Chloe Trion and Danae van Niekerk, base price, $37,000. Are you kidding me? Those two together are enough to win most games. But they're not on the same team. But Mumbai Indians bought Chloe Trion and Danae van Niekerk went to RCB. I don't know if it's really weight-related things or anything, but Lisa Lee, I don't spot on the list at all.
No, I'm not even sure if she put her hand up for her. I assume she would have. Laura Vulvar didn't get
Laura Vulvar. Yeah. Very interesting.
Susie Bates, I don't think, got picked up either.
Susie Bates didn't get picked up. Laura Vulvar didn't pick. Amy Bowman didn't get picked up. What's that all about? Sune Luke. Chamari Attapattu. Are you kidding me? Nobody picked her. Yeah. It definitely is, I think.
Very strange. Unless maybe there's a political angle behind the scenes with some of these personalities, perhaps. I don't know. Let's start some rumors.
Leah Tuhuhu, Freya Davies. And Freya Davies is really young. So, yeah.
But Tess Flintoff, I don't think she got picked up either, and she's sort of an up-and-comer as well.
I think there's some learning going on here. I would not go beyond that. I would not say things like, political angle, because Sri Lankan cricket and Indian cricket have always been friends. Remember, whenever India needed somebody to play, they would call on Sri Lanka and Sri Lanka would come, or we would go there.
Okay. Who's the girl from Bangladesh with the really strong eyeliner?
Jahanara Alam.
Alam, yeah. I don't think Sugar picked up either.
Nope. Hmm. Again, weird. No? Okay. I mean, look, I think this is so much more stats-driven than we would give credit for. I think teams work round the clock for weeks to then come up with these sort of lists because it's money after all, yeah? So there may be more behind the scenes to do with simple mathematical models and so on that may have given these players to be let out.
It is only the first edition of the whole thing too, so maybe we shouldn't be too critical of them.
Exactly.
Not picking up a couple of people here and there.
Yeah, but overall a very successful auction and lot of players, lot of money. And again, as I keep telling you, this at least will change the way women's cricket is pursued in this part of the world, I'm hoping. So
it's made the news down here. So It made the news from the point of view that Ash Gardner and Elise Perry and so on have made some money being picked up for an IPL team. But it's ordinarily, I don't think we could get a great deal of coverage of women's cricket overseas unless Australia was directly involved. So it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. So we'll keep an eye on the space in the coming episodes as well. So some small mentions now. Well, Sridharan Sriraman, who was sort of in charge of the Bangladeshi T20 team, might not return is one of the rumors we hear. Nothing is confirmed, of course, because recently you saw Chandika Hathorusinghe being brought back. And he was given the longer format teams. And it was announced that Sridharan Sriraman would stay with the T20 Bangladesh team. But maybe it looks like he might not go back to that job. Surprises for you?
Well, do they have anybody else sort of subtly lined up to take over? Have they been trying to court somebody to come in and take the job and just keeping him on the end of the hook until they can finalise it?
I don't think so. I think it might be just the other guy, the other big guy, Hathorusinghe, saying, let me be in charge of all three things. Or, you know, there might be some ideological differences in the way these two people approach the game and the coaching setup. So the board may have said, you know, one guy we trust in, he has two, let's give him all three. No?
Hopefully it's not a case of we can't afford to pay an extra guy.
Yeah, okay. We don't know these things. But we really hope, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I need to see, or as a fan of sports, I would like to see a revival of Bangladeshi cricket. They were punching well above their weight. 2015, 2016, they've fallen on the wayside currently. I would rather see them go back to that. Whatever happens off the field is one thing. But I would like Bangladeshi cricket to stand up again and start boxing, punching hard, right? So let's hope that comes through.
Fingers crossed, because yeah, I like them as well. They seem like a pleasant bunch of people, which is an odd way to judge a cricket team. But there you go.
Well, as your former captain Grumpy said, don't show thumbs up to your opposition. Play with a slightly harder edge. No.
Yeah, that's why I hate the Australian team.
Look, mate, he got your team to where it was by holding it by the ear, I think, in the 80s. He let Boone drink 52 beers on a flight to England and all that. But he's known as Captain Grumpy for a reason. I think that's what he should say. If he said, smile and wave your arms, I would be a bit more concerned. Yeah, it might be senility.
Yeah. You can't go out there treating it like a bit of village cricket. You've got to take it all very seriously, but there's a point where it stops being taking it seriously and turns into being an obnoxious obsessive, I think.
it is
just a game at the end of it all.
Well, it's that fine line that Australian cricketers like to straddle, I think, especially the men's cricketers.
The fine line as far as Australian cricket goes is just an excuse. So, we don't cross the line, but the line constantly moves to just past where they crossed. So they never actually cross the line because they keep moving it until they end up getting fined.
Well, truer words have never been spoken, I think, about Australian cricket, but I'll let that rest. That's quite prophetic. I don't think you can top that. So any last parting words, Mog?
Go Namibia.
Fair enough. Anything to plug?
Not particularly. Listen to Guerrilla Cricket, people, because that's where you get to hear me warble stupid songs. That's the extent of that.
Absolutely. And Mog is also on Twitter. So if you are associated with Guerrilla Cricket World or any other way, I think he occasionally puts out some inane political related tweets, which I've seen, I must say. So he's a nice guy to follow on Twitter, right?
Be prepared for potential strong language and terrible opinions.
Yes. I must complimenting you on no unsavory four-letter words in this podcast. Well done.
That's been taking every inch of willpower.
Oh. You know, there's a joke about General Patton when he met the Queen of England. Or was it the King of England at that point? Yeah. So King. General Patton was introduced to the King of England. And he had gone red in the face in 5 minutes because he was trying to hold in all those swear words that General Patton is famous for. Yeah?
Soldier's
so, well
tongue.
Done. Well done. You've won a great battle for yourself as well.
As a... All just to make your life easier.
Thank you very much. And I'm sure all our listeners appreciate your inputs as well as your decent language. But wonderful chat as always. So I would like to
thank you. Thank you very much.
So, just a small word of, excuse if I may say this. Both me and Mog have been sitting in a slightly noisy environment and there may be some ambient noises that may have been picked up. So I would like to request an indulgence from our audience. Well, if you made it this far, thank you very much. And we wish all our audience a good day wherever they may be listening from. Thank you. And bye-bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.